Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The future of the arts in New York City was put into sharper focus last week when the Metropolitan Opera announced that it would cancel its entire 2021 season. Closed since March, the Met had faced more than $150 million in lost revenue. 1,000 full-time employees have been furloughed without pay since April. It's a scene that's played out across the city's arts sector. Before the pandemic, the city said 280,000 jobs in the fine and performing arts. But between April and July, 153,000 of those jobs were gone. It stands now, the path forward is not much brighter. A survey by the nonprofit Americans for the Arts showed that 11% of arts organizations in New York were not confident they would survive the pandemic. As the treasurer at Broadway's Walter Kerr Theater told the New York Times, quote, "Anybody in this business knows you save money for a rainy day, but we didn't know it was going to rain this long." New York Times reporters Michael Paulson and Elizabeth A. Harris are the co-authors of a thorough article from last week titled "The New York's Art Shutdown, the Economic Crisis in One Lost Weekend." Michael joins me now. Hi, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Elizabeth is with us as well. Elizabeth, thanks a lot for making the time.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, and listeners, if you work in the arts, how has your job been affected by the pandemic? Have you been able to continue to work or to return to work? How have you been able to adapt? Or have you decided just to change jobs completely? Give us a call, 646-435-7280. And looking ahead, what, if anything, are you hopeful about for the future of the New York's arts? 646-435-7280. Okay, who's got the car alarm?
That would be me. I was just asking Michael about that. Hey. Sorry.
It's all right. We're a live show in New York. That's the way it goes. Michael, let me start with you. In an alternate universe where COVID had not shut down arts in New York and things were on schedule, what would have been on the calendar for this week?
Oh, that's such a good question. You know, that's kind of how we started to think about looking at the plight of the arts in New York. This would have been essentially the start of the fall. This is the first official weekend of fall, this past weekend was. And the calendar was just filled with Broadway shows. The Music Man with Hugh Jackman and Sutton Foster would have been running. This new Michael Jackson bio musical also would have been up and running on Broadway. Justin Bieber was supposed to be playing. Billy Joel was going to bring back his series. The Irish Arts Center was scheduled to open. It's been building a new $60 million home in Midtown that was scheduled to open this past weekend. There was lots you could do. And none of it is actually happening, of course.
Elizabeth, in the piece, you've been describing an arts industry that goes way beyond the obvious landmarks like Broadway. When we talk about the arts industry, what do we mean, Elizabeth?
So sure. I mean, when you think about the city and the arts, you might think of Radio City Music Hall or the Metropolitan Opera or New York City Ballet and things like that. But there are actually thousands of small arts organizations in the city. There are, there are about 4,700 different arts organizations, cultural organizations in the city. And a study by the New York City Mayor's Office last year found that there are about 750 small theater venues. Just in theater alone, they created about $1.3 billion in economic activity and were responsible for 8,400 full-time jobs. So it's really, you know, there's the big guys, but there's sort of mid-sized places, St. Anne's Warehouse or, Martha Graham and sort of dance companies like that. And then there are these little places that are tiny, but are really crucial to the sort of bubbling up of kind of creative ideas in the city and also to people's jobs. You know, this is where a lot of people work.
Michael, I think part of his story was the suddenness of it all. I was looking back on my calendar for that week, and we were the first week in March, and we had just been able to slide in a show that was on the East Village and get it on the air, and I was trying to just figure out if I was going to be able to go see Six on Broadway or the new Steve Earle show at the Public. I was really juggling a lot of different things, and then the bottom fell out. I'm curious in your reporting how much of that has been part of the problem, that people just, it happened so suddenly.
Yeah, it's so shocking, right? I remember that period, too. Six was the last show that I saw that weekend before Broadway shut down. And, you know, this was the period of time when Broadway really gets intense. A lot of shows open in March and April to qualify for the Tony Awards. And none of that happened. And, of course, nobody had really planned for this. So at first, everyone was predicting that things would be dark for a few weeks, a month. And it's only over a long period of time that it's become clear how staggering this is. It looks like Broadway will be shut down and most of the big performing arts stages in the city for well over a year. As you mentioned in your intro, the Met Opera has now said they're not coming back until September of 2021. So that will be a full year and a half for the city's largest performing arts organization. And it's hard not to imagine that that sends a signal to many, many others.
My guests are Michael Paulson and Elizabeth Harris from the New York Times. We're talking about the state of the arts in New York City. If you work in the arts, we want to know, how has your job been affected by the pandemic? Have you been able to continue work? Have you gone back to work in any capacity? Or have you had to change jobs completely? Looking ahead, if anything, are you hopeful for the future of arts in New York City? You can tell us why. Our number is 646-435-7280. Let's actually take a call from Maggie on line one, who's calling in from Piscataway, New Jersey. Hi, Maggie. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What's been going on in your world, Maggie?
So I'm an actress. I work in theater, and mostly I do regional stuff. So I'm, you know, all across the country in many different capacities. But obviously, I come to New York. I live there to audition and things, because that's where everything happens. And right now, clearly, if you've ever been to Pearl or Ripley or any of those on an open call day, they're crowded and packed, so none of that's happening. However, you know, there's still opportunities for a lot of free readings online. There's a lot of Zoom. People are adapting that way. But to get paid for my job that I went to school for is not necessarily an option right now. But actors are the Swiss Army knife of people. We kind of adapt to whatever scenario we're in, as, you know, anybody who's in an artistic industry does. But, you know, restaurants, that sort of thing, are kind of our fallback job, and those things were closed for such a long time that now I know a lot of my friends, a lot of the people who I work with, are all kind of on the struggle bus right now, especially because we're not getting any sort of federal help anymore at this moment. But of course, there's optimism. We're all optimistic people. We're hoping for the best outcome we can and for things to open, for us to go back to some semblance of normalcy sometime soon. But, you know, art is important. Mm-hmm. Theater is important. It's escapism at its finest. And to not have that, especially in New York, which is the mecca of that, is disheartening. But, you know, I'm optimistic. I hope everybody out there is.
Maggie, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. Let's go to Alex on line two, who is a filmmaker. Hi, Alex. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi there. Is this working?
It is working fine. You're on the air.
Yeah, just, I guess, where I sort of get caught in all these conversations right now, I'm a filmmaker. Was a theater director for many, many years, migrated to film about 9 years ago, and do music and all sorts of things and a lot of niche projects that are in between all these different forms. And one of the things I was doing this year was a new version of Carnival of the Animals that was going to tour a bunch of the Philharmonics with Chris, the actor Chris Sullivan, doing pieces that I was writing and directing in the middle. Anyway, it got canceled, obviously, because it was going to be live in Philharmonics, but then conversation sort of pivoted to possibly taking this idea on some level and turning it into animation, which, you know, it reeked of the same thing as our desire to push everything towards, towards Zoom and those kinds of things. And so it was kind of a fascinating thing to see people trying to move a piece like this, the content into a totally different form. And that kind of got me thinking on my broader point, which is just that while we all, as artists and certainly as storytellers and the creatives who are telling the stories, while we all feel like we've lost the financial structure, we feel like we've lost our patrons, we feel like we certainly lost our audience, and the act of gathering itself. The main thing, I think, the most important thing that's kind of lost in all this actually is a point of view, because as storytellers, our job is to wake people up in a certain way.
Right.
And this pandemic has woken a lot of people up already. And in fact, we're in a free fall in this moment. And, you know, Samuel Beckett may have written plays in response to World War II for his entire career, but during World War II, he was working on the Breadline and in the Resistance. And the truth is, as artists right now, we have to figure out a way to survive. I understand that. But to actually try to be in a representational mode during this crisis,
mm-hmm.
Kind of defeats the purpose of what our job really is to do. And if we're actually to make therapeutic work that actually deals with processing the trauma of this thing down the line, the way it's going to work is we're going to have enough space from it to actually know who we're talking to, what
right.
people are on the other side of this, who we are, and what the new form of awakening that is required it needs to be. So that's the main thing I think that we've lost, and the main thing we actually have to be, in a weird way, patient in order to regain, because otherwise the stories are BS, you know, and our job is actually to try to tell the truth.
Thank you so much. It's such a fascinating point. I really appreciate you sharing that. I want to also point out, you know, we've been talking about the creative folks, people in front of the camera, the people, but there's so many other, Elizabeth, support folks who are involved here. We're talking about stagehands and tech folks and people, makeup artists. You know, you wrote an example about Playbill normally prints a certain number of programs each day, and it's down to zero. It's 1.7 million programs. So what other kind of industries have been affected, Michael or Elizabeth, either of you can take this, that we're not necessarily think of, that aren't necessarily top of mind? Elizabeth, why don't you go for it first?
Okay. I think, you know, the way you phrase it is exactly right. I mean, you know, there's, you know, the people who, you know, there are the ushers. It's not just actors. It's ushers in Broadway mm-hmm. houses, right? And the people who clean the theaters and the people who are security for the theaters. And it's also people who, you know, maybe work in, you know, have office jobs at Lincoln Center. I mean, you know, these are big organizations, or even the smaller organizations. It's not just the people on stage and sort of the kind of people that you think of as, you know, the dancers, like someone is training those dancers and someone is making their costumes and all that. So there's really a huge ripple effect. And like Maggie, the first caller, was saying that, you know, the ripple effect from all of the other industries, like a lot of people who, you know, work creative jobs also maybe work in the service industry. And, you know, they're work in restaurants, they work in bars, they're fitness instructors, and all of those sort of secondary careers for them have taken enormous hits as well. So it's really kind of not just the obvious places where you would see this. And also, you know, one thing that sort of she mentioned, if I can just jump off that
of course.
For just a second, she was saying is sort of theater is escapism at its finest, and that's true, and also like absolutely, you know, art is important, but it's also very kind of important in very concrete ways to the city. I mean, I was speaking with somebody who was pointing out that, you know, we live here, right, and we pay too much money for our tiny apartments, and it's a pain to have a car and all of these things, and a big part of why people live here is because of the arts, and the city isn't sort of sustainable in its current form without those kinds of things. Otherwise, you're just living in a small, expensive apartment. As you know, if you can't go to the theater or hear music or you know, go to great museums and kind of have all this at your fingertips, like the sort of the incentives that make this a good place to live don't work the same way, and there's way less reason to visit if you're not, you know, if the arts aren't available.
Let's go to Abby on line four. Abby, thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. So it seems like you haven't had a whole lot of work lately.
No, not at all. I'm the director of production for a lighting design company.
Mm-hmm.
We do primarily fashion shows and music festivals and other live events. Our last show was March 7th, and we had about $8 million of business disappear in a 72-hour period.
Hmm.
And my company employs hundreds and hundreds of freelance lighting designers and production managers and stagehands, electricians, riggers. Just the magnitude of the number of people affected in our industry is astronomical. And, you know, those of us behind the scenes don't, you know, we're in the business of not getting attention. And we hear so much about restaurant industry and airlines and hotels and all of this hospitality that is super important and deserves every bit of attention. But we're having a hard time getting our voices heard. This isn't just a job for us. This is a career. We have advanced degrees. We have homes. We have children. We have committed our lives to our craft, and we've become quite good at it, and we've maintained lifestyles supported by being paid well in this industry. And I mean, just in my personal friend group alone, everyone is out of work. And that ripple effect you're talking about is really profound. As a vendor, I hear so much from my vendors who sell me lighting equipment or rigging equipment, hardware, and they're coming to me saying, hey, do you have anything? All of these businesses are just starting to realize how affected they are by the cancellation of live events, and it's truly profound.
Abby, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story. My guests are Elizabeth Harris and Michael Paulson from the New York Times. We're talking about the impact of COVID-19 and coronavirus on the arts. Michael, in August, Senator Chuck Schumer was touting the Save Our Stages Act, a bill he co-sponsored, written by Senator Amy Klobuchar and Republican Senator John Cornyn, which would direct $10 billion to music venues. Has there been any movement on this or legislation like it?
There's a lot of discussion about it, but no, there has not been movement. There are a variety of efforts, particularly in D.C., to get government support, both for people who work in the arts and for, in the case of the act you mentioned, for people who run venues. And there's, as you know, Congress is a little bit paralyzed right now, and nothing seems to be happening. I did want to say, I mean, Abby makes a point that we heard over and over again in our reporting from people who work in the arts, this sense of being kind of forgotten or overlooked, that they're just, our society doesn't seem all that focused on the plight of all these people who earn their livelivhoods in the arts. And the arts, as she points out, very broadly defined. You know, we quickly think about actors and singers and dancers, but there's all these ancillary businesses that are both essential to maintaining the performing arts and also provide a living for a ton of people, many of them in New York, and none of them are now working.
Let's go to line five. Sam, I believe. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Line five is Bevan. Bevan is calling in. Thanks for calling all of it, Bevan.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And tell us a little bit. I see on my screen about you, but tell our audience who you are.
Sure. I am the executive director for the Drama League. We are a arts advocacy organization for stage directors in New York, and we're over 100 years old. So we were around for the first pandemic, the Spanish flu, survived that. So now here we are in this next one. And, you know, it really has changed how we do what we do, but not our purpose, which is to support the careers of stage directors.
Excellent. Continue.
Yeah, you know, back on March 12th, when everything shut down, I was at a tasting for our annual awards. And in that moment, we had to pivot, to digital. We had to think about what our stage directors need now. So we surveyed specifically stage directors and found that pretty much instantly 80% of them had lost all of their jobs, all of them. So, facing millions of dollars of losses, the first thing we did was we launched the Director's Emergency Relief Fund so we could create micro grants for directors who had had plays canceled and or postponed indefinitely at this point. But, you know, now as we look forward, we're looking at a new reality where we may be making work and practicing and doing Zoom rehearsals for a little bit longer than we hoped. And we want to be a part of that return and make sure that we're ready and that our stage directors have the resources that they need to be ready to jump, so we don't lose this generation of emerging directors.
Thank you so much for calling in, Bevan. We appreciate it. Let's go to Sam on line 6, who's a set designer. Sam, thanks for calling in.
Hi, how's it going?
It's going okay. How are things going for you? That's the important question.
Well, I've been lucky enough to actually have been hired again in the last month on a contract for a Broadway show that will hopefully open next year. But it's all sort of, I mean, it's very tentative. But, I mean, no one I know is working. Mm-hmm. Every colleague I know has been out of work. I'm a set designer for theater. I don't know if I said that. But, I mean, everybody has been laid off since March. So many associates, you know, you think of the set design, but it's not just the set designer. A lot of the time there's multiple assistants that work full time. And most people back in March, producers exercised the force majeure clause in our contracts, which just allowed us to be laid off. So everyone, you think you have like a salary and then all of a sudden it's just gone.
Right.
But beyond that, I mean, all of the support industries have been closing, like prop rental warehouses where you go to get set dressing or, you know, if you need a chair. Most theater operates in the margin, so we don't have a lot of money. And these industries allow us to acquire, you know, chairs or tables or, you know, picture frames, whatever you need, and be able to rent them like for a week and then return them.
Right.
But they've all closed. So I don't know how, when this is all over, I mean, Broadway will come back at some point. It's going to take years, but all of the sort of the fringe downtown theater and smaller regional theaters, I mean, if they can weather this pandemic financially, mm-hmm. even if they reopen, I don't know how we're going to produce the work that we produce with the money that we have.
Right.
Because it's all dried up.
Sam, thank you for calling in. Tiny on Twitter wrote to us, I'm a burlesque performer in New York City. Me and my fellow performers are losing income, trying to do virtual shows, but hard to get audiences. Too bad city doesn't value artists and entertainers. Before I go, Michael and Elizabeth, I want to point out something that was in your piece that is something I've heard a lot of people talking about. You quote Darren Walker of the Ford Foundation as saying the pre-COVID New York was a city that was increasingly out of reach for the average artist. Elizabeth, is there any reason to hope that post-COVID New York could become more affordable to artists?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of the people are looking for any silver lining you can find right now, right? And it's a possibility, you know? I mean, what's going to happen with the real estate market? No one really knows, but presumably there's going to be some sort of correction. And, you know, that could mean that, you know, arts organizations will find space more affordable and artists will be able to rent apartments for less. You know, I mean, this is the city has obviously had an enormous affordability problem for years. And, you know, I mean, not that anyone wants to romanticize sort of the, you know, problems with crime and stuff like that the city had in previous decades, but things were cheaper and it was easier mm-hmm. to live here as an artist. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, kind of potentially scary stuff on the horizon for the city. But if it becomes less expensive, you know, no artists are not going to, you know, don't come here to make a lot of money. And it could be helpful for some individuals and some institutions, some smaller institutions, if rent becomes less onerous. So that's a possibility.
Dave from Brooklyn is a costume designer. Mm-hmm. We see you. Dara from the Resistance Revival Chorus was holding. We see you as well. I want to try to get through some of these names. We talked to Sam already. Christian Line 1, a jazz musician who was having difficulty. We're sending out good vibes to you, Christian. think I got through. Leo from Manhattan, who teaches Shakespeare at the 92nd Street Y. We see you, Leo. And we also want to say thank you to Michael Paulson and Elizabeth Harris from the New York Times for sharing their reporting about the arts and culture scene. I think we could have done this for another hour, so we may have to have you guys back as we continue to follow your great reporting. Michael and Elizabeth, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.